Hi, Femi Okay, and you're in the stream. A wave of progressive politicians have been elected across Latin America in what has been described as a pink tide, a turn to the left. Have a look at this map and you'll see exactly what I mean. This new wave started back in 2018 in Mexico with Andrés Manuel López Obrador. Since then, Honduras, Panama, Guyana, Suriname, Peru, Bolivia, Argentina, and most recently Chile have welcomed left-wing leaders. So what does this mean for the region and the world? Well, today's guests are going to help us answer that question. Hello, Isabel, Oliver and Teresa. So nice to have all three of you here. Great brains to tackle this question. Isabel, please introduce yourself to our audience around the world.
Hi, I'm Isabel Castillo. I'm a political scientist and a researcher at the Catholic University in Chile and at the Center for Conflict and Cohesion Studies here in Santiago.
Oliver, tell the stream audience who you are and what you do.
Hi, I'm Oliver Simple. I'm a professor of international relations at the Getúlio Vargas Foundation in São Paulo, Brazil.
And welcome back to Teresa. Teresa, please introduce yourself. Remind our audience who you are and what you do.
Well, my name is Teresa Bo. I'm a Latin American correspondent for Al Jazeera English.
All right. And your audience, if you're watching on YouTube right now, you are very much part of this conversation. The comment section is now live. Jump into the comment section. If you've got questions or comments for our panel, they're very happy to answer them. All right, let's start, Teresa, with pink tide. As far as you're concerned, when you're down on the ground in Latin America, what does it look like? How would you describe it in more detail for our audience?
Well, if I have to look back and we talk about a pink tide, and if we talk about what it is about reforming the region as a whole, is looking back to when abortion was legalized in Argentina. It was a very long night for us waiting for a vote in Senate. And you could see thousands and thousands and thousands of people on the streets waiting for abortion to be legalized in this country. And it's not only to be legalized. This abortion is something that was already happening in Argentina. Mostly poor women were affected. And let's not forget that this is a country of Pope Francis, of the influence the Catholic Church has had in different Argentinian governments, in Congress, in the Senate. So when abortion was legalized, it's like this first, it was very moving to see how grassroots movement in the region and how that inspired other parts of Latin America as a whole. And what happened after that, you know, the whole debate in Colombia, in Mexico, in Chile. So when we talk about pink tide, aside from economic policies, from center-left governments, I'm also talking about rights, about rights in the region for minorities, for women, and that's something that it's been very, very, very exciting for me to watch.
Oliver, I see you nodding. Please articulate that nod.
Well, I think we certainly have seen progress when it comes to minority rights, women's rights, etc. At the same time, I think it's important to point out that parts of the pink tide are also profoundly conservative, sort of an old school nationalist left-wing social conservative, like many of the iconic figures of Latin America's left, Morales, Chavez, Fidel Castro, were all, you know, pretty homophobic. And there are some of these which are part of this new iteration of the pink tide, like Castillo in Peru, who's fairly conservative. But I do agree that there's a new generation of leaders, like Boric, for example, in Chile, which are clearly, I think, have the potential, particularly if they do well, to redefine what it means to be, progressive and in Latin America.
I'm so glad you said that. I'm just going to bring in Isabel here because definitely when Gabriel Boric was elected, people were, whoa, a student activist now becomes a leader of Chile. That was a shock. Was it a shock for Chile? Did you see that coming?
Well, we could see it coming. The first round was a bit of a surprise because the runner-up was a far-right candidate. So that was somewhat unexpected. But for a while, Boric had the lead. But it was all, I mean, if you had looked 5 years ago, no one would have expected this. It partly has to do with the social uprising that began in late 2019. That sort of shifted all politics of the country. And I think it's part of the reason why Boric ascended. And I think he's a great example of this new left, as Teresa and sorry, not Teresa.
Oliver
were saying the things like how they relate to the feminist movement and to feminist agendas. One of the things that clearly divides different brands of left-wing governments in the region.
Isabel, allow me to be trivial for one moment because I'm going to show a picture on my laptop. So this is Gabriel Boric. And I was talking about this picture with my producer. I was like, he's just got tats on. He's got tattoos. Is that it? And he's like, yep, that's it. But I've never seen a leader with tattoos. Now I'm sure that our audience will then send us in tweets with all the leaders who have tattoos. But I think there's something in this picture, although it seems quite lighthearted, that tells you a lot about where Chile is. Because there are many other countries around the world who, if you're 50, you're still considered young to be a leader.
Yeah, no, he just turned 36. He doesn't wear a tie. That's one of his things. He didn't even wear a tie to when he took office. And he has a much more direct relationship with citizenry. Like he, less so now that he's taken office, but he's often on Twitter and interacting with people. And a lot of people feel that. There are crowds of lots of children and families waiting for him to get home, to be able to speak to him. So it's not just the image, the tattoos or the lack of a tie, but there's a clearly more horizontal relationship between him and the population that what we are used to, especially with this last government of Piñera, who is actually twice his age. So there's a big gap there.
I think that the generation gap between Boric and the rest of the presidents, even though they are progressive in Latin America, is fascinating, mostly because of what we have, you know, heard him say. I mean, what he said, for example, about condemning human rights abuses wherever they are, in Nicaragua, in Venezuela, and even Cuba. This is something where most governments in the region, if you want to compare it with Lula da Silva in Brazil or Alberto Fernandez, they have been reluctant, in a way, to condemn Venezuela when protesters were killed, among other things. So Boric has been very, very serious about human rights, for example, about macroeconomic policies in the country. One big, big challenge for Latin American governments have been stability, economic stability, especially, for example, here in Argentina or in Venezuela, where we've seen the millions of people leaving the country because of the enormous economic crisis in that country. Well, Argentina is another problem. Lots of macroeconomic problems. Inflation rates are soaring right now here in Argentina as a whole. And Boric says that keeping, you know, economic stability, preserving the macroeconomy of the country is also a priority for his administration. And I think that's very, very interesting because, you know, it's a new left, as you said it before. So we'll have to see what he can do with that.
Oliver, I want to play you a video comment. This comes from Martin. He sent this in to us a few hours ago. Have a listen. He has a different explanation about the pink tide. And then as soon as you finish listening, I'd love your response. Here's Martin.
We can consider that since 2019, different social movements have been like empowering a new political cycle. And this political cycle, I will not make the mistake to call it a second pink tide, because it represents different flavors of politics that are centered in like social movements that are against the patriarchy, the extractivism, and like social injustice. I will call this something like a multicolored people's tide.
Yeah, I think he's pointing to several important differences when we compare this new pink tide to the leaders who emerged in the 2000s. And I think two issues stand out. The first is the environment. There's clearly now, I mean, Boric is very concerned about environmental issues, very different from past progressive or left governments in Latin America. We see the same with the leading presidential candidate in Colombia, Petro, who's in a way an environmentalist as well, and the Workers' Party in Brazil, despite not really having prioritized this issue, will clearly embrace, if they win, a more environmentalist policy. The other issue is that, yes, Boric has a very different background and sort of grew up in social movements, which occurred within the context of democracy, whereas past leaders in Latin America who came to power in the 2000s, many of them were engaged in the fight for democracy. Lula, for example, you know, became a politician during the dictatorship, very different political context. And of course, issues like women's rights were not really on the agenda 20 years ago. And that is quite a challenge for some leaders who are seeking to engage conservative voters as well. Lula, for example, has just picked or is likely to pick and now present in the next days a conservative, vice presidential candidate. So he may also face some limits when it comes to, prioritizing these issues, which points to the fact that countries like Chile and Argentina perhaps are a bit more progressive as societies than other countries like Mexico, Colombia, and Brazil.
Teresa, I'm just thinking of this history of the pink tie. This is almost Pink Tide, the sequel, because in the late 90s, the early 2000s, there was another pink tide. I'm thinking about the differences. I'm not the only one. Valentina sent us this comment a little bit earlier. Have a listen, and then your thoughts, please.
There's not only one left side now in Chile. There's different types of left. There's also political parties, but political movements that are representative of the left-wing parties now here in Chile. So they think different. They do things differently. So it's very interesting to see if things are going to work out for the government. And people do have high expectations about what's coming. They are positive of this. But as we can tell among history, things don't always go as they wish. So we're going to have to see if the things go like people want, or there's going to be some kinds of disappointment within the government that has been now elected.
Well, I think that the big difference between what happened back in the early 2000s with the government of Hugo Chavez at the time, Néstor Kirchner in Argentina, Lula, you know, it's a completely different region in a way. At that time, this whole pink tide, if you want it that way, was led by Hugo Chavez's so-called socialist revolution. Venezuela was leading at the time in Latin America. Venezuela was assisting governments in the regions. There were regional alliances being made all the time that supported each other. What I'm seeing right now is, first of all, the disappointment in a way that happened with Venezuela, the enormous economic crisis that happened. We're talking about a country that suffered around 1,000,000% inflation rate that forced around 5 million people out of the country. So the whole disenchantment with what happened in Venezuela is not happening right now. So I'm seeing, at least in the region and in several governments in the region, lots of pragmatism. I'm seeing pragmatism in Alberto Fernandez here in Argentina, that he stresses the need for Argentina to negotiate with the International Monetary Fund for the risk of being completely isolated from the rest of the world and Argentina being left from international market. The risk is much bigger. So I think that while leaders back in the early 2000s were anti-American in a way, or challenging the United States, well, I think the leadership right now is much more willing to engage with the United States, to engage with superpowers. And I think that, in a way, it makes it interesting. But of course, it doesn't satisfy everyone. We're seeing right now, for example, demonstrations by the left in Buenos Aires that are condemning the government. But we're also seeing protests from the coalition, from the ruling coalition, that is the leftist side of that coalition, that it's also on the streets demanding that austerity measures are not implemented. So, of course, there's going to be lots of challenges. But among the leadership, at least, I'm seeing lots of pragmatism when dealing with everyday problems.
Isabel,
Isabel,
you go first. Oliver, you go second. And okay. YouTube is going to go third, because I've got some really juicy questions for you. Isabel, go ahead.
Yes, great. Now, I would add a couple of points to this comparison with the early 2000s. So first is the economy. So in the early 2000s, there was these leftist government came to power when there was a commodities boom. So all of our economies are based on commodities. So there was a lot of money, resources to expand social policy. So that also facilitated their success. And I think a second difference now is that, as opposed to what was Chavez or Correa in Ecuador or Bolivia, where they changed their constitutions and they were generally popular and had big support through some tangling with the rules as well in Congress, now all of these are very tenuous coalitions. So Boric doesn't have a majority in Congress. If Petro is elected, they just had the legislative elections, and he won't have a majority. Lula is also entering in coalition for the same reason. In Argentina, the Peronists also lost the majority in Congress. So all of these coalitions are quite weak, and that will also partly limit what they can do, but presents quite a different scenario from compared to the early 2000s.
Oliver.
I think that in addition to the much tougher economic environment, I sometimes feel, talking to people across the region, that people are also growing a bit tired of the extreme polarization that has shaped the political debate. Mm-hmm. At least in Brazil, this is very clear. People just want to sort of get leaders to get things done, to deliver good public policies. And Lula's decision to bring in a conservative on his presidential ticket kind of shows that he clearly believes that this cycle of extreme polarization is over, which has shaped politics in the last years. So I tend to agree. I think there's quite some potential for pragmatism, also because it's just such a difficult economic time. It's the region that has probably suffered most in the world during the pandemic, a tremendous reversal in the areas of public health, public education. So I think people are really focusing now on issues like inequality, bread and butter issues, reduction of poverty.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons that explains the rise of the left.
Oliver, Tiago is watching you right now, and Tiago says he's from Brazil. I would like to know what you guys think, Oliver, about the chances of Lula turning back to the presidency. What do you think?
I think he's leading the polls, and I think his gestures are clearly showing that he'd like to attract centrist voters. He likes to project a big tent alternative to Jair Bolsonaro. I think it's going to be much closer than many people believe. There's a lot of doubt about whether Bolsonaro would accept defeat or whether we'll see something similar to January 6th in the United States. But Lula is clearly the
favorite. January 6th in the United States? That's not good. That was an insurrection.
Yeah, I think we have very similar rhetoric about, from Bolsonaro questioning the legitimacy of the voting system. But I would still expect right now, looking at the polls, I think Lula clearly is a favorite to return after 20 years. Back to the presidency.
Another YouTube question. This one I'm going to put to you, Isabel. Will Davis says, so this conversation about the pink tide, it depends on the kind of left we're talking about. A left that wants to redistribute wealth to the bottom is useful. A left that just wants to put more diverse people in charge of a failing system is no good. That's Will Davis's perspective. What's yours, Isabel?
I think they're both complementary. I mean, part of the demand here in Chile, but I don't think it's in any way exclusive to the country, is to renew political elites. Colombia, I think, has a similar demand. We don't want the same people in power. So there's this strong anti-establishment, and this generational change here in Chile points to that as well. People want to see new faces and hopefully new different practices. And, of course, a company that would structural reform. But I think people are very distrustful of traditional politicians. So I think that bringing in new people tends to be well valued here in Chile, definitely. And I think it's not rare. I think we see that in other countries.
Yes, I want to push us on in the last 5 minutes of our discussion into what the impact of this pink tide could be. Will policies change? Will different things happen for the people on the ground? Angela Vergara is a professor at the California State University, and she's looking at extractive industries and how maybe a different approach to those extractive industries may have an impact on what changes in each of the countries that have a leftist leader. Here's Angela. She explains it so much better than I just did. Here she is.
One of the biggest challenges that new leftist governments face today in Latin America is how to respond to the environmental consequences of extractivist industry. And I think this is particularly relevant today because if in the past what we can call the first generation of pink tide leaders, they respond to this by nationalizing extractivist industry and by using that money to finance social services and infrastructure projects. project. Today, this becomes a little bit more complicated because the evident environmental cost of that and the impact on indigenous communities.
So you know what I'm thinking, Oliver, is if you have a wealth of fossil fuels, but your philosophy, your politics tells you that you shouldn't be using them, you should be protecting the environment, what do you do? What funds your social policies, Oliver?
Well, for example, in Colombia, Petro is clearly saying he wants to move away from fossil fuels, from extractive industries, wants to boost tourism, for example. That will, of course, be a challenge because there's a lot of short-term needs. And one way to address them is to fall back to the old development models. In Chile, too, I think many will watch closely whether the transition, the economic transition that Boric is proposing will work out. Because when we look at other left-wing governments in the region, they've been clinging on to traditional ways of doing business. So I think a lot will depend on how Chile will perform, which in many ways I think could inspire others or look at Chile and say, this is not how I want to go about developing the economy. So I think that's definitely the country to watch out for in the next months and years.
Isabel, I am wondering if what is happening in Chile right now is seen as a positive development, a positive change in politics. Here's Thea with quite a complicated question that I would love you to have a listen to and respond to.
These governments are coming to power on the heels of Latin America's worst recession since independence. So for the past 200 years, Latin America never experienced as bad a set of economic conditions as it did during these pandemic years. So that's one major constraint. A second is that most of these governments will govern under conditions of what we can call divided government, meaning that they do not have majorities or actually anywhere near close to majorities in the legislatures of their countries. That means that in order to get any legislation passed, they will need to dialogue, negotiate with, and even ally with centrist or even right of center parties in some cases in order to get any legislation passed.
So you have a young leader in Chile as a student activist. Well, so much promise. What will be delivered?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, right? So, yes, Thea said, and we discussed before, he doesn't have a majority, but I think there is a window of opportunity, partly because we had the social uprising. We are in the middle of a constitutional process. So some elites are aware that changes are needed because there are demands that need to be met, right? So there's an opportunity to do that, and Boric has pushed that some forms of structural change in his program, but also recognizing that he needs to speak to big business. So there's a balance there that is under construction. They're carrying out big dialogue. And to do that with a focus on protecting the environment, pushing new industries such as green energies, for example, and with a feminist focus. So, for example, in terms of recovering employment, they've pointed to focusing on women's employment, which was hit the hardest by the pandemic.
I want to go back to the map that I started with at the very beginning, so I'm just going to put that up. Teresa, I'm in the last 1 minute of the show. I'm just looking at this pink tide, this pink wave, however you want to think about it, for the region. What does that mean for the rest of the world in the last 30 seconds of today's show?
Well, I think it's an experiment in a way, mostly Chile, to see what Boric can do, what he can achieve with lots of conservative forces against him. And that's something that we've seen in the region as a whole. We've seen progressive governments in the region fighting against more conservative forces and allying, in a way, with conservative forces to be able to reach some type of an agreement. And going back to the whole extractivism issue, the big challenge for many countries is the inequality, the poverty that continues to exist here, the amount of people that depend on the state, and how those states are able to make
Teresa.
To try to change the situation here.
Thank you, Teresa and Oliver and Isabel, for helping us understand the pink wave across Latin America. Thanks for watching, everybody. I'll see you next time.